Hello, and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmond. And joining me as ever is the leakiest of buckets in the history of all buckets, Mr. Joe Devine.
Hello.
This is the podcast in which we chat about the movies or films, some people call them films, that we forgot we'd even seen in the blimmin' first place. And we use that as a launch pad to talk a bit about the film and then other bits and pieces.
Oh, under the hood.
On today's episode, we are going to do the 2016 sci-fi of a sort, Passengers, directed by Morten Tildum and starring, of course, Christopher Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence and featuring Martin Sheen as a bartender robot. It's 116 mins, a little bit too long for my taste for this kind of flick.
Good lord.
And here is the Letterboxd. There is a reason they woke up. A spacecraft travelling to a distant colony planet and transporting thousands of people has a malfunction in its sleep chambers. As a result, two passengers are awakened 90 years early. Sort of. They're obviously playing it very close to the chest.
Well, they do that in several scenes throughout the film.
You what? Oh, is that like a really, really subtle joke?
Well, it's a subtle joke, but also when you said the name of the director, it was a name I didn't recognise. You said Morten Tildum, and I thought, well, I should check who that is, because I thought that sounds like a name that Morten, that could be a the name for a person of any gender. And I checked it, and then obviously it is a man, because I don't think a woman would have made the film like this.
But he directed The Imitation Game.
Right, yeah, that's the one with old Benjamin Button. What's his name?
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Benedict Cumberbatch, yeah. Still never seen that film.
It's fine. Do you want to hear my Letterboxd review of The Imitation Game?
I'd love to.
A perfunctory exercise in compression. Whistles stop touring the viewer through the Second World War, the invention of the computer, and the criminalization of homosexuality. That's a lot of dramatic meat to tuck into. Alas, Game barely has the time to get said meat into the oven. Never mind serve it up for dinner. Sorry, I've just laughed at my own wordplay. That's just the kind of Letterboxd stuff you'll get from me.
Hey, did you make it to 100 Letterboxd followers yet?
I did.
Oh my God. I can't believe you didn't text me. What a momentous day for you.
Anyway, let's move on. Mm-hmm. You found this film obviously directed by a man. I think you're speaking to a particular objectification of the lead actor, Jennifer Lawrence. There's an amazing bit. Let's jump straight ahead to the finale, where she has to pull a big lever, and it's so hot, she has to take off her shirt to pull it.
That's right, she's sweating and glistening.
Yeah.
And it's Jennifer Lawrence.
It's Jennifer Lawrence. Now, I think she signed up for all that kind of stuff. She does. She's in control of her body, and she's it's a tool, it's an instrument, and that's what she's happy to do. And she does it in films like Red Sparrow, and this.
Sure.
And I just admire that commitment to the craft.
Okay.
But what would you think? What did you and your wife think? Were you trying to kind of stymie how hot under the collar you were?
Well, I watched this film mostly alone. My wife joined me for the final 30 minutes. And I was going to bring this up anyway because this is my third viewing. I don't know why. But the second viewing included my wife. We'd watched this together probably, 5 years ago, something like that. And she knew she'd seen it. She had no memory of it. And at the end,
perfect.
When they were talking about whether to send Jennifer Lawrence back to sleep again or not, she said, why does she have to go back to sleep? And I thought, yeah, you really... that's a forgettable movie right there. But on the point of objectification, I don't know if I would use that word or not, because I'm not in the heads of these people. I don't know the context. But it does feel throughout the film as though there are a number of occasions when it's a very intimate camera work. Let's say that. And the costume design is very... Understandably, you're on a ship, but essentially alone. You might as well wear, pyjamas. And listen, it's Jennifer Lawrence. When Jennifer Lawrence is wearing pyjamas or anything, it's probably going to be sexy, right? So maybe the objectification is me. Maybe I'm doing it.
It is.
Jennifer Lawrence in virtually every scene is wearing a sort of negligee of one kind or another.
I love
a lot
to
of satin.
Say the word negligee.
Negligee.
Can you say it again? Can you say it again?
Well, she's wearing
please?
A negligee of one sort or another. She's wearing a lot of satins, a lot of silks, a lot of cloths that cling to the shape, you know? And there were one or two moments, again, perhaps the intimacy of this is important, right? There were one or two moments where she's in a darker moment, where she's her emotional state is negative, yeah? And she's lying in bed and sideways and the top arm comes over. And I think, is it really necessary now? Why do I need this cleavage at this moment? Surely the focus of this part of the scene is here is a character going through despair, yeah? And there's despair on the face, despair. An immaculate acting performance, not really, but, you know, terrific actor. So there's the despair all over the face, and then look down a little bit, and there's just a lot of cleavage in an intimate. Is it necessary? I don't know, and I'm confused about it, and I'm confused about my role and I don't know. Am I supposed to be talking about it? I don't understand.
The problem with it is it's Hollywood titillation, no pun intended, because I watched a film, a foreign film recently called Worst Person in the World. Yeah. A Norwegian film, and that features a very young actress, and the film is about this young woman, and it's a fantastic film, and there's also quite a bit of nudity in it, but it doesn't feel ever like, and it's also directed by a man and co-written by another man, it doesn't ever feel like it's a male gaze thing, and it never feels titillating. It feels it always feels like a cop-out, which it feels very European.
Right.
And it doesn't, but maybe because it's not about titillation, it is just, she's got her top off.
I feel like European can be very sexy when it's supposed to be. Whereas I think the issue I had with this film is that there are numerous scenes when it was sexy and I didn't think it was supposed to be sexy.
When they start getting off with each other and snogging, it is positively gross. And I don't use that word a lot.
When she crawls over the table.
Yeah, it's weird. I think that let's rattle through what the film is. It is a sci-fi about this big ship and it's flying through space. Chris Pratt gets woken up because something goes wrong and then he's all alone on the ship. And the sci-fi premise is what would he do? He's all alone. He's all alone for a year.
There's 90 years left to destination before anyone else wakes up.
That is the cat. Okay, the cat's shat. The cat has shat before on the podcast and the cat is shitting on this one.
Okay.
So, of course, he's about to kill himself. He decides not to. He sees Jennifer Lawrence in a tub and the film does a lot of work to make sure that he falls in love with her mind. You know, and it really goes through this whole thing. And then, of course, in a moment of weakness, he wakes her up, pretends like he hasn't. And then the whole middle section of the film, it's a romance.
Sure. It's a house on fire.
It's a big Hollywood titillating, old-fashioned, meet-cute romance. And it's really slushy. And then they start getting off with each other and snogging.
Well, it's slightly voyeuristic because they are alone on the ship. The whole premise is that they are there alone and not only can they not go back to sleep, but nobody else is going to wake up, right? So they can kind of do their dirty business anywhere they want.
Just like Dennis just did.
Just like Dennis just did in the cat litter tray. The camera is a little bit, it makes us a little bit voyeuristic, doesn't it? It makes us a dirty watcher.
Where I think the film would really, it's neither fish nor fowl. It's not sci-fi, but then it feels like this whole middle section should be this, like one of those 90s sexy thrillers, like Dead Calm or Basic Instinct, or where you've got a bad actor, not, you know, someone back to acting in bad faith. We've got a bad actor on this film, but I'll let people figure out who that is.
That's a tricky one.
And this film for me is far more compelling if it's Chris Pratt is a bit more of a... It's not Chris Pratt for starters, it's Billy Zane.
It's 100% not Chris Pratt.
Have you seen Dead Calm?
No.
It's a nice, neat little thriller set on a yacht. Nicole Kidman, Sam Neill, they're in the middle of nowhere. Really early Nicole Kidman, they pick up this guy on a what's it called? Like a dinghy or whatever. And then, of course, he turns out to be nutso. But it's all about slow burn. Is he mad? Is he not? And then... And that's what you want in this film, is the kind of Chris Pratt character. Has he done something bad? Has he woke... You know, what's his game? It's the whole middle bit should be a mystery.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, obviously, there's a real futility in wishing what a film could have been.
Sure.
It's just, I don't want to watch these two supposedly attractive people snogging for a good 40 minutes, knowing exactly at the midpoint, which is exactly an hour in, and I know exactly, you know, I paused it and went, yep, pat on the back to me, midpoint. That's exactly when Jennifer Lawrence finds out that he woke her up.
Yeah. I've learned this too. I was smoking by the door, not really watching. I was on a clock. I had to get this film done. And as I said, I've seen it twice before. And when old Michael Sheen breaks the news to J-Law, hey, Chris Pratt broke you up. He woke you up, you know. I thought, hey, the film's halfway done. Bingo. I had a great feeling. I had a rush of only 1 hour left.
There's a feeling of everyone, both of them respond exactly how you expect them to in this kind of film. He has to wake her up. Because otherwise there's no film.
Yeah, otherwise there's no film.
She has to find out, otherwise there's no film.
Yeah.
Something bad has to happen on the ship so he can mea culpa
his bad
acting.
Lawrence Fishburne has to wake up and has to die.
Oh my God, I totally forgot. I didn't just forget. I absolutely, totally, fully, literally, like totally, do you know what I mean? Forgot that Larry Fishburne gets woken up.
That's
just
right.
Just so his insides can melt.
Sure.
And he can give them his bracelet.
Just so he can give them the one bit they need for the plot and then get out of the way. Otherwise it's weird that there's this kind of three thing going on, and you know we need him to wake up, but you know, how can he, what if the pod in the process of waking him up, what if it also damages him so that he won't survive very long, just long enough to give them the key to unlocking the plot for the rest of the film? That sounds good, let's do that. I have a thing to say based on what you were just saying.
That's a classic conversation, that is.
Yeah, that's what that conversation
is. That is textbook.
Textbook conversation. Yeah.
I've heard what you've said.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I've then switched off.
Yeah.
And I've just been waiting to speak.
And this is going to lead you. No. This is going to lead you into Pratt. This is your segue for Pratt, if you want it.
I don't want to go anywhere near this guy.
Well, you do what you will with what I'm about to say, but there's a Pratt segue at the end of it, okay? I wrote this down in my notes. This is kind of my summary of the film. What if Sunshine and The Shining were really, really boring and they were crossed with the rebooted Jurassic Park but without any dinosaurs? That's this film. Does that make sense to you?
It's funny. It's not quite right, but it's funny. It's a great fun sentence. And in fact,
but you know why I've said The Shining, don't you?
Yeah, because there is a shit bit at the beginning where he has a horribly fake beard and goes a bit mad.
Well, there's that, but not just that. There are other Shining aesthetics too. Michael Sheen's entire character is just, like, I'm watching Chris Pratt and Michael Sheen, but I'm watching Jack Nicholson talk to the bartender at the Overlook Hotel, you know, the man who's not really there. The character who is and isn't a character. That it feels very reminiscent of that. Sunshine, not really, because it never really goes full sunshine, but they've got their viewing deck and they've got, you know, got the look at the sun as it goes past, and I don't know, sunshine.
it looks... I don't mind the aesthetic of the film. I like... It's all quite solid. The ship and the world that they've built is pretty decent. And I think this script had been knocking around for years, and all manner of different people were attached to it. And it's just one of those, weirdly hard sells. Like, it's only going to get made if it cat.
Is that the
if
cat?
if it's got stars attached. Do you want to know who was originally attached?
Would I be able to guess if you gave me the year?
No.
No, okay, well then, yeah, then, sure.
Keanu Reeves and opposite Rachel McAdams.
Okay, yeah, I really like Rachel McAdams. Bit of an odd match, yeah.
It's an odd match. There's not, I think Keanu's struggling in this film.
Maybe, sure. Well, look, I mean, Pratt, I am burning to talk about Pratt because he's, I mean, we've acknowledged this already, he's just wrong for the film. I know he was hot in 2016, but he can't do it. And I know also that I'm not the mean guy here, and I'm always optimistic, and I, you know, want to look at the bright side of things. I think Chris Pratt is a terrific comedy actor, and I think in the correct role, he can really bring something. I thought Chris Pratt as Star-Lord, I'm on board. Yeah, on board with Star-Lord. But Chris Pratt as Jim Preston in Passengers, he cannot do it. And added to that, the only thing that could ever make this film work is if the two central characters, the actors, have chemistry. And they do not have chemistry. Jennifer Lawrence is just a terrific, matey sort of actor. That's all it is. What she does with her face and her reactions and her little subtleties, they make it seem like there's chemistry there. There's nothing there. Nothing. It's not even sexy when they're doing sexy stuff. It's like she's being sexy and he's just there. It's awful.
To pay off, you know, this guy does the worst thing possible.
Yeah.
He basically condemns whoever he wakes up to death, to die effectively, not alone, with him.
Yeah.
With him on an empty ship.
Sure.
So this guy, the actor and the character, has to be...
Gotta have a little slime about him.
So smoulderingly sexy.
Yeah.
And a bit dark. And who do we want? Oscar Isaac.
I mean, Oscar Isaac is canon for Passengers, I think. I'm not sure you could have got a better... You know, Jeremy Renner's too wholesome, right? You need someone who's got a little bit of that. Viggo Mortensen.
A young Viggo. Who's the guy? Pedro Pascal.
Pedro Pascal's too friendly. He's too friendly. And also, his whole thing would be he'd be anxious to the point where he'd fall apart if he ever actually went through with it.
Okay, maybe. I mean, it's too easy to say Ryan Gosling, but Ryan Gosling is knocking this out of the park.
Man, I don't know that he is. I think he's too nice a guy.
Throw in that kind of the smarm of crazy sexy love and the kind of dirt of the, you know, something in the pines.
What he does is a little smarm, a little smirk, a little bit smug. He does all the smms, but the point is that they are the thin outer crust that sort of just about stretches to cover with some cracks and a little few holes. The nice, warm and gooey innard of Gosling that is only pure, right? He hasn't got that edge about him. He is only a good guy. That's who he is. Oscar Isaac's not just a good guy. I would believe that guy would do something fucked up, yeah? That's what I need to see in this person.
Yeah, they also need to be a bit kind of ugly sexy.
Yeah.
They can't be wholesale, like, this is a chiselled, attractive guy in the traditional sense. But would you do it?
Yes.
You're on... Oh, hang on a sec. This segment will be really short. Because all anyone said when this film came out is they... Maybe there was nothing else to say about it, but they all immediately shit on it. Like, this guy does this disgusting thing.
Sure.
And it's like, that is the premise of the film.
Yeah.
That's the question it asks.
That's the question of the film.
So, you know... To say that is pointless. Just say it's a shit film. It is a bit of a shit film. But, you know, why not engage with the idea? You're going to either kill yourself. What's worse, killing yourself? Some people think that's a sin.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, waking up someone.
Sure, sure. I mean, look, the first thing I would say, the film doesn't do a terrific job of this, but it tries to show that... He thinks about doing it for the first time a long time before he does it, okay? And if he didn't do it after a year, he would have done it after 2 years. And if he didn't do it after 2 years, he would have done it after 3 years, right? He's going to live on this ship until he's dead. There's no fucking way he's not waking someone up, okay? You cannot put someone, a human being, in isolation from other human beings for, let's assume he's 35 years old, yeah? For 40 years, with a little button next to them that says, press this button really easily if you want a bit of comfort and company. And then they don't press it. That doesn't happen. So everyone in the world does that. Now, the moral element of this, I think, doesn't come before that decision. It comes in the choosing who to wake up. Because, as you said already, the film does a lot of work to try to show that this character falls in love with the mind of Jennifer Lawrence and not just the body, yeah? But he does wake up Jennifer Lawrence, who is extraordinarily attractive. So the question really is, let's just assume that we're definitely waking someone up. Anyone, yeah? A, if it was you, would you wake up a man or a woman? Okay, and if you were waking up a man or a woman, would you wake one up that was a 10, attractive-wise? Or maybe, you know, a 6 to give yourself a little bit of wiggle room? And a bit of, hey, whoa, hey, it's not just because of that sort of thing. Or would you go through all of the manifest and try to find someone who seemed fun but also had relevant skills to help you solve the situation?
Or why not just wake up everyone and just condemn everyone?
Yeah.
Just say, fuck you guys, you're all waking up, this is it, and we'll live here and we'll procreate and our children can live on the planet.
I think I would do that.
I do like the idea, though, there is this in the film that it kind of suggests that there is no such thing as love and that you'll just get it on with whoever's just closest and happens to be there. If
we were the last two people in the world that would likely be together. But hey, we are the last two people in the world. I'm in a movie.
I mean, what's that line based on?
No, yeah, there's no reason. It's just because they want to say that line.
Well, because the scriptwriter wrote it.
Maybe because she's rich and she's wealthy and of a different sort of class to him. That's not.
But
really
they don't.
Explored.
The film does not bother to deal with any of that sort of stuff. She's a writer and he's an engineer, and she's an appalling writer.
Sure, it is bad writing.
I wrote a line. This is my this is one of my favorite bits in the film. He's reading her writing. They're teenagers. She's a teenager because she's writing and she's giving it to her partner to read.
Sure.
And she says something, and he says it out. You hear her saying it, and then he says it out loud. He says, "Strange shores, I love it." she's used the phrase "strange shores," and he's like, "Sorry, you're a thicko, mate. If I was a writer, if I'd written that and I gave it to someone and they said, 'I love that,' I'd say I don't rate your opinion at all."
Sure. I'm cutting that out of the story immediately. Now I've heard someone else say it, I've realised how awful it is.
And I'm obviously not a good writer. I shouldn't have... I don't know what I'm doing.
Let's do that as a bit now. Hold on. I'm reading. Oh, strange shores. I love that. Strange shores. I guess we are on strange shores, aren't we? Because there are shores, but they're certainly strange.
You know, when I wrote that, I think I was just reaching for the nearest cliche.
Oh.
And I, do you know what? That's the sentence I'm least happy with
cliche
in the whole story.
Right. Oh.
So
that's my favorite bit.
It's a bit, I don't know what to do with that. I don't want to suggest that you don't know what you're talking about, but it kind of hurts me that you've picked out what I consider to be the shittest bit of writing.
Well, I mean, you wrote it. It's your, and you've asked me to read it.
Do you know Strange Shores? It's not like a clever thing. Right, it was just a placeholder.
You're doing a normal accent. I'm going to do mine as well. But look, anyway, to be perfectly honest with you, you are the only other person here. And my parents taught me something about respect. I don't know which bit to pick out. Yeah? You say this is cliched. It's all dog shit. I'm just trying to be polite, and now you're chiming in, chirping back at me.
Chiming and chirping. I don't mind that.
Well,
that's
who's writing this thing? Is it
you should have a go.
Well, yeah, I'll have a go, and you try and fix the fucking ship. Yeah, let's see. Look, if I can do your job as well as you, and you can't do mine, then what does that say about you? Why have you got the gold pass here, and I'm eating this gruel?
Well, journalists are notoriously well paid, and will be needed. Will be needed when we arrive to this new colony. And turns of phrase like strange shores.
Well, they'll all be strange, won't they?
Well, they'll be common currency. They won't use money when we get there.
Yeah.
People will be using my short stories as forms of payment.
Right.
You know, I'll be the bank when we arrive.
I think you're deluded. And listen,
I think you listen.
By the way, you don't know this yet, but I woke you up, and I now massively regret that. And I'm going to spend the next few days back down on the deck looking for someone else to wake up. Because look, you've got a banging body, but your brain is mush, love. Okay, you are not a good writer.
That was a test and you failed. Okay, Strange Shores was my favorite line.
Right.
I wanted to make sure that you really liked it and you understood what I was talking about and the depth of meaning that was underlying it all.
Sure.
And you've...
What's the depth beneath Strange Shores?
You've buckled.
No, you've buckled.
I tell you, listen, the ship's got this ship.
Martin Sheen is just rolling around in the background creating that weird noise. I don't know. He's obviously uncomfortable.
I've got to get the cat's ball. Sorry, this conversation's over.
Oh, is that another cliche? I've got to get the cat's ball. Is that some kind of metaphor? Can I, while Dennis goes mad in the background, can I suggest something to you about this whole conundrum? Because we were talking about whether it was okay or not to wake her up. And look, the answer is obviously yes. You're obviously going to wake someone up. Everyone just needs to get over that ASAP because that's clearly happening. Do you wake... But what the film does, because it has to, right? At the end of the film does something that it has to do, right? Which is it presents them the opportunity for her to go back to sleep. Finally, the problem that they have the whole way throughout the story is no longer. They can use the part in the medical bay to send her back to sleep now that they've got the code and the access from old Lawrence Fishburne, who's woken up for 5 minutes and died, right? And the question becomes, do you want to go back to sleep or not? The question is posed to J-Law, because she's the one who's been wronged in this situation, and it suddenly becomes a choice for her whether to remain awake or not. And the film paints this as a binary choice, right? When she makes the choice to remain awake and build a life with Chris Pratt, that means that the audience can go away all warm and cuddly and go, oh, she did love him because she chose to stay instead of, you know, what actually happened. I'm thinking, why have you made it binary? Why didn't they say, you know, they had a lifetime to think about this. Why didn't they say, tell you what, pop me back to sleep, wake me up for a day every 2 months and we'll hang out. Yeah, he can go 2 months without seeing her. He can get stuff done. He's, you know, it's a bit unfair, whatever. They can't share it because it's still not enough time to share it. And then you'd have this fun film, a sequel, where every time she woke up, he was a little bit older, you know. And then one day, what would happen? My grandfather used to text me every night when he went to sleep. Well, I guess it was around 10 p.m. when he was going to sleep, saying, sleep well. And I always used to think, oh, one day I'm not going to get the text, and that will be the day that I know that he's dead. That didn't happen, actually. Sometimes he forgot to text, and I didn't even notice. And then when he died, he'd been in a hospital for a whole month. So, you know, the texts were long gone by then. But the point I'm making is that he could have just woken her up once every 2 months. It all would have been fine. Have your cake, eat your cake. That's what I love to do.
It's a good idea. We just need to figure out where in the structure of the current story that bit happens. Because it does... I mean, that makes more sense. Instead of having the big, oh, we've got to fix the ship conundrum.
Yeah.
Like third act, which is all just go here, pull this lever.
Yeah.
Boringness. The film has set up a romance, a love story.
You're going to have to do something about this cat.
I can't. There is nothing. There's nothing I can do
about
it.
There's nothing you can do about the cat.
No, he's running around. He goes crazy sometimes.
He puts the socks on him.
You want me to put socks on a cat?
Well, it would make less noise as he's like walking around on the wooden floor.
I think people are just going to have to deal with it.
Sure.
He'll tire himself out. And if people can hear scrabbling around in the background, it's a cat. I don't know what, it's not the people I've locked in the basement, like scrabbling around trying to get attention.
Dennis!
I'll take a video of the cat,
sure,
just as proof.
Sure.
If proof be need be. he'll hop up on the sofa and start snoozing again soon.
Sure, hope so.
It's all just, isn't this all just texture? I mean, maybe put this in the movie. There's a crazy cat,
yeah.
And like every time they're having a serious conversation,
the cat shows cat up. Just,
yeah, and it makes it. He scrabbles around so much, it becomes impossible for them to have a conversation.
Yeah,
and then one day she just goes, "Look, forget it. Can you just put me to sleep?
Forget it
until the cat's dead. You know, I can't. I don't want to kill the cat, but I do want to be asleep. And then when the cat's died of natural causes, wake me up again.
Yes,
and then he puts her to sleep. And then what he does is he goes 10 rows down and he wakes up another woman who he also finds attractive.
He could keep doing that as well. If he could put them back to sleep again, he could have 7, you know, different relationships going on at the same time.
I was sort of joking when I thought that could be a funny alternate ending. That would, the meat of the film would be you have just the point of view of, you start with Jennifer Lawrence.
You're on a little hill where you've gone, there's nothing I can do and it'll have to be fine. And then that means you have to talk seriously through it.
The film works so much better if the POV is with Jennifer Lawrence from the get-go.
Right.
And you know as much as she knows.
Yeah.
And then...
That's true. Why didn't they do that?
You open it up wider. She starts to get suspicious. And then she realises somehow that she's not the only one. He's waking up other women, and it is kind of a bit gross and sex dolly, so maybe it's still actually not that fun to watch.
I think the notion of the film being from her perspective and you knowing what she knows is much, much better.
Yeah, but I also think
with Oscar Isaac,
it's probably quite a hard film to write.
Sure.
And maybe I think them leaning into the soppy romantic side is possibly the thing that makes it all more palatable. If you're gonna spend, and we won't get to the budget yet, they would have spent, I reckon, in the hundreds of millions on this. It needs to go down smooth with the thickos,
yeah.
And so they've made it a very, very broad romantic film.
It's so broad.
But like, I think that twice they offer the opportunity to get out of this kind of gross decision that Chris Pratt has made. He sacrifices himself. Like, so if he dies at the end so she can live, boom, he's absolved.
Sure.
Or the second get out is she says, thanks, put me to sleep. Now fuck off back to your weird little, you know, pit. But she just suddenly goes, oh, come on, let's have a life together.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And I would also say that all of the, you know, the sacrificial nature of Chris Pratt's actions towards the end of the film, I will sacrifice my life to save yours by being in a wind tunnel. You know, this is basically the film. That to the audience is the pure sacrificial gesture, yeah? But in this world, it's all topsy-turvy. All the values are different. You know, the context has changed. If you sacrifice yourself after waking someone up and effectively ending the life they thought they were going to have, you then leave them alone forever, yeah? That's kind of double worse. If anything, I'd be kind of more annoyed if I was woken up by someone else and then they sacrificed themselves to save me. I'd go, well, hold on a minute. It was bad enough that I was woken up and I lived with you. Now it's even worse that you've done that. In this context, what does the sacrifice even mean? It doesn't mean anything. It's meaningless, right?
Yeah, it's like Jesus is dying for all our sins. It's like, no one asked you to do that, mate. No one. Ooh.
I like the notion of you standing in front of the crucifix, watching him with the spear in his side, the pegs through his hands. He's moaning, groaning. He's dying slowly. It took him 3 days, no forget. He looks down at you and says, child, I'm doing this for you. And you go, ooh, nobody asked, Jesus. Fuck off.
It made me think the whole notion of film criticism is absolutely pointless, because if you don't like a film, it just means you've watched it at the wrong time.
Do you want to play the box office game?
I think we should.
Okay, let's play the box office game. The box office game. Now, for the film Passengers, what do you reckon the estimated budget was, Adam Richmond?
A lot of big... You got a big talent. You got a big, big special effects. Let's say 120 mils.
Oh, very close. And tell you what, you are within the exceedingly strict 10% range here, because it was 110 million.
Impressive. I don't know. Is it impressive? That's a lot of money to spend on drivel like this.
It looks like a $100 million movie, doesn't it? Maybe it's not that impressive. Now, opening weekend, US and Canada. What is it taking? And let me tell you, IMDb lists the opening day of this film as, can you guess, December the 25th.
In America.
Christmas Day in America.
Apparently Christmas isn't such a big thing in America. They've much favour Thanksgiving.
They like to be Thanksgiving, don't they?
They're all tuckered out come Christmas.
Yeah. Well, no one wants to spend any more time with their family, and who can blame them?
All the movies that we think are Christmas movies, they're more like Thanksgiving movies.
Yeah.
And when I say all, I mean Planes, Trains and Automobiles.
I tried to watch that again the other day with my wife, and I watched 30 minutes of it.
Yeah.
And I have seen it before.
Yeah, good.
And then I just gave up because it's just not for me.
Did you find it too stressful?
Just don't find it funny.
I rewatched it. It's a Christmas movie in this household. And I definitely found it. I didn't laugh. The laughs are quite spread out in it. But it's generally like watching those two guys, Martin and Candy, together. I just love being in their company.
Sure. I have done in other films. I appreciate and respect them as performers and actors, of course. But that film, if I didn't know that people consider it to be one of the greatest comedy films ever made, I wouldn't watch it and think that was the case. I'd watch it and think, well, this is kind of a strange... Bit of a strange Christmas film, you know. Okay, fine.
It's nothing strange about it. It's a textbook road movie, like Chalk and Cheese, forced together, having to get from A to B.
It's just japes so and scrapes. Boring.
Yeah, but it's not odd.
I guess not. But it's odd that it exists and that people are saying it's great.
I mean, fuck me.
I don't get it. I don't understand
I don't know why I care that you're the one who looks like a dickhead now. I'll just let... Fine, let's just use...
You can I'll let that lie. Sit there. I don't mind. I
feel
really
like
don't.
You represent me and I should know that you don't.
No, the audience know
Joe's
that too.
Joe's thoughts and words do not represent me, his co-host.
I guarantee you there will be people listening to the show who will have watched that film also and thought, what's the big fucking deal? I don't get it. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but it's clearly not for everyone, and or maybe there's a generational thing, that's why I'm not getting it.
It is mainly for everyone. It's such a broad people
crowd pleaser. It's mainly for everyone.
I mean, that's like saying Home Alone isn't for everyone. Home Alone is basically for everyone.
Sure.
And you can think... it's not good or not, but it kind of is. Right. It's tooled.
Yeah, I'm curious.
For everyone.
I'd love anyone to write in to moviesyouforgotyouforgot@gmail.com if you have seen Planes, Trains and Automobiles and you've thought, yeah, I don't get it. I don't get what the big deal is. And I'm not saying you thought it was a bad film. I certainly don't think it's a bad film. I just watch it and don't understand why everyone thinks it's the greatest comic film of all time.
They don't think it's the greatest comic film of all time.
It's always in that conversation. It's always in the conversation as like best comedy movie.
It might be in the top 20, but it's not as great. It's not the greatest. Never, ever, ever.
Fine. Okay.
The
it's definitely
that's
in the top 10.
Doctor Strangelove.
People talk about it as
that's because it's
in amongst
because it's,
it.
Because it's got lines like "those aren't pillows" and "you play with your balls a lot" and. When he starts singing "Three Kinds on a Fountain, each one seeking happiness" on the bus,
sure.
There are so many. And when he goes up to the woman, he says, "I want you to wipe that stupid fucking smile off your stupid fucking face." It's got enough moments that are so memorable that make it That's all a film needs.
I love it when someone's five... evidence proves both points at the same time.
A film to be... I don't necessarily believe this, but I'm going to say it. A film needs five memorable moments.
All right, Mark Commode's joined the chat. Sorry, I didn't realise I was in the presence of someone with a rule. Anyway, email into moviesyouforgotyouforgot@gmail.com. If you've watched the film Planes, Trains and Automobiles and you think it's not, it's not up to scratch for you.
And then also, if you don't want to do that, if you don't want to be on Team Joe...
Don't email in.
No, ideally not. Right. Or email in and say, how many moments, great moments, we're talking iconic, memorable, it could be a line, it could be a sequence.
Iconic how many- moments.
I'm using that word loosey-goosey.
Surely you only need one iconic moment for it to be a sort of good film.
You don't have to be a fucking pedant about this point. It's a fucking... I'm just asking people to do a thing.
Right. I think you need to be clearer in what you're asking for.
I disagree. I don't want to be clearer.
You don't want to say... Let's hone that down. Do you mean iconic? Do you mean really good? Do you mean brilliant? No. Memorable?
I want people to take from what I say and figure out for themselves.
Right.
I don't want to spoon feed them like a baby. And I don't want
you're holding the spoon feeding adults. Because they don't want that either. That's weird.
Yeah. A baby. Listen, I am the baby.
I'm a baby.
I am so bad. The food is smearing all over their face. But I'm happy for them to lick their lips and touch their face and get the food in their mouth.
You don't want them to lick up the food off the floor after you've tried to spoon feed them like a baby.
I'm not interested in that, okay?
No, I'm not. Neither
and I also don't want you to start coming in on my question that I've just thought of.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm saying it out loud.
Yeah.
I haven't got enough humility.
Whoa, Chief, I'm backing off now. I just thought I'd point out that it was confusing because...
I don't have enough humility.
Most films don't have one iconic moment.
Listen, I've started the sentence three times now.
Finish it. You've got
it. I do not have enough humility to stop speaking and to let you help me.
That's right. That's right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So what I'm looking for is five really good moments in a film. We're talking, they've got to be memorable, striking even. We're talking, how many? I think five. How many moments, good ones, pretty good ones, striking? Okay, how many does a film need to make that film, stick around in the canon? Even if, to Joe's point, he doesn't think Planes, Trains... It is, right? So I think there are enough really great moments in that film.
Right.
Even if it is probably a bit boring and slow sometimes.
Sure.
For it to stay in the convo.
Hate to butt in again, guy. I'm not saying that Planes, Trains and Automobiles isn't in the canon. I'm just saying that I don't find it funny.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. And that's why I think we've got a little point here.
Right.
A little I think the reason why it does is for the reasons I've said.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to open up to kind of accepting you not liking it.
Right, right.
And I think that's what but it was just a slight little pushback to open up to this other side question that I think is pretty clear. I've laid it out pretty, there's clarity there.
That's right.
And I think people know what I'm talking about.
Well, anyway, it was released on Christmas Day. What do you think the opening weekend US and Canada taking was?
This is a toughie woffie. This is a toughie woffie. I don't care who you are. The stars. This has got big stars.
110 budgeto.
But I don't think it was very well received.
25th of December.
People don't like sci-fi.
Oh, by the way, two issues here. My final things of my list of notes. Right.
Yeah.
The film starts with the most fucking genre-type sci-fi music of all time, which I hate whenever that happens, because it starts to play the little light synth space tones thing, which, you know, is only associated with sci-fi films, and then it goes, look, it's a sci-fi. You're looking at space, and we've got the boop, 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 and I'm like, just fucking have no music, or some other music, yeah? And then the film ends with an absolutely atrocious credit music. It is the kind of music that nobody in the world likes.
And Imagine I wrote Dragons.
Was it Imagine but Dragons?
People love Imagine Dragons. It's Imagine Dragons.
It's a fucking atrocious. And I wrote a little lyric down here to really prove my point. Yeah? Here's the lyric. Though our journey's long, I know our love is strong. You're my shooting star, flying high above. Just levitate. Fuck. That is just pathetic.
Because I was already so annoyed that they played that A Little Less Conversation song.
The Elvis remix.
Yeah, that's probably one of the worst. One of the worst songs ever written, and it appears in so many films.
Yeah, it's pretty common.
So, you know, I wasn't expecting anything great. But yeah, it's an absolute stinker.
I'm feeling a bit bad now. I realise they were a real band. I thought the song, with lyrics like that, I thought the song must have been written for the film.
Well, yeah, maybe by them.
Right. It finished with cinema. And also, you have an opportunity with this film, which is largely a shit film, right? You have
shit
an opportunity
film. Shit to... Film to or shit film or ship film?
It's a shit ship film, yeah? You have an opportunity at the end to leave people thinking, oh, maybe that was quite good, because what do you get? You get the perfect reaction shot. What you get is everyone waking up from their pods, walking out into the main area, and seeing the remnants of the life that these two people built together, and the visualization everywhere of their love, right? That's a powerful moment. And if you mixed that with actually good music, and with something a bit more than just hiring four extras to dress as, like, crew and walk out, yeah, get a few more people in there and get them all to walk out.
Well, they spent all the money on Andy Garcia. They've got Andy Garcia front and centre, and they're like, we can't afford anyone else.
He can't afford... Excuse me, Andy Garcia's agent, can he say one thing? No, he can't. You've got to pay more if you want him to say anything. He will stand there, but, you know, it's
can he bring some friends along with him to, like, beef out the people behind him? No, Andy will not bring anyone with him.
He doesn't have any friends. He can't bring anyone along, Andy Garcia. Anyway, the point I'm making is that there's the opportunity to create actually quite a powerful moment there. And it's the sort of thing that might have left me. Replace that ending song with a Radiohead song and get a few more actors in and get, like, some really great expressions of, like, wow, life faces. They're looking at what's happened and seeing their love and whatever. I might start to even think myself, maybe this was a good film.
I'd take a Muse song.
I'd even take a Muse song. I think a Muse song would have been fine for this.
I'd take a Coldplay song.
I wouldn't take a Coldplay song. You're pushing your luck now.
Okay.
Maybe an early Coldplay song. Maybe a Coldplay song from a Rush of Blood to the Head or something, but not past that.
Fix You. Bang out Fix You. It doesn't make sense, lyrically.
The only one that they would use around this time, it would be, at the paradise. Oh.
No, I'd do Clocks. You'd do the Clocks. Be-doo-boo, be-boo-doo,
be-boo-boo, be-boo-boo,
be-boo-boo. Yeah, but fine. Use that. People still, you know, bang out Clocks, man.
Paradise came out in 2011.
Christmas Day.
13 years ago.
So you're... Okay, now what are we talking about? What are we talking about?
You're guessing opening how boxer. Much the opening weekend was.
Right.
Budget 110. Released December 25th.
I don't think it's making that much. It's not even making jumper money. I'm going to say 10.
Well, pretty close. It was 14.8, nearly 14.9 million.
That's not good, man.
Okay, it's not great. Okay, well, would this film have picked up over time? That's the question. What do you think the gross worldwide for Passengers was?
I'm pretty sure it's not down as one of those flops. It might pick up, but I think it might just about clean its face, or maybe just its nose. So if it's 110, people are gonna... I turned up, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, I really like the script.
Lawrence Fishburne.
I'm turning up because of the scriptwriter.
Uh-huh.
That's just the kind of guy I am.
Sure.
John Spates is written, you know, wrote the script for Prometheus. Yeah, and yeah, he wrote the first Doctor Strange, which is a very solid little one of the solid Marvels.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so let's say it made... People across the world are going to go and have a little sliver.
And perhaps across the world is the key here, Adam.
I think so. So let's say 150.
I regret to inform you that you are rather far off.
Is it more or less?
It's more than that. And I'm going to accept as your final answer, but I will give you another, the game's finished now. You've lost the game, but would you care to guess how much bigger it is?
I said I'd never do this.
Yeah.
But I feel like I need to have more humility in my life.
Okay.
I feel like I need to stop being so fixed and saying, no, I already said that. And the me in the past is the person I want to be.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the me in the past. I want to be the me now.
Right.
And I want to be me in the future.
I want to be me in the future.
So with that in mind, me now, I'd love to say a number. It's so much fun saying numbers.
Yeah, say another number.
500.
Not quite, no. Now, with that in mind, would you like to have another further guess? Does you in the future want to have a third guess?
No. This guy, he's licking his wounds.
While you're doing that, let me tell you that the film grossed $303 million. Double your original answer.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy. But interestingly, the gross US and Canada was only $100 million.
Yeah, so because people across the world are...
Worldwide,
international audiences, we're kind of starry-eyed when it comes to stars.
Sure, and we love space. I think sci-fi, they love sci-fi in Brazil.
No, I think it's more the stars.
Right.
It gets the punters in.
It gets the... Where are the punters from? Puntland?
What? Puntland? Punters?
Well, I was talking about the Brazilians, you were talking about the punters. I thought maybe they were from Puntland.
You know what? You're just too clever for me today.
Right.
I don't... I'm not even half... a beat off the pace. I'm basically stuck in the mud in the toilet.
Sure.
Licking my wounds.
Right, wound
so,
licking.
So, I'm sorry. That was the box office game.
Do you want some emails now?
Oh, yeah, have you got some emails? We haven't done emails for a while.
I've got a handful of emails here for you. The first one comes from Sunil Bajaj, our friend of the podcast. He sent this in November. It said, still Ross. Thanks, Sunny. It is still Ross. Appreciate that. Now, Luke Richardson writes in saying, definitely got you with this suggestion. That's the subject line of the email, Adam.
Bold.
Yeah. Luke Richardson says, hi guys, absolutely love the podcast. And he put two exclamation marks, which either means he really, really means it, or he's doing a bit. And I think hopefully it's the first.
I think that's lovely. Thanks.
Someone mentioned this film to me the other day, and it completely got me, having erased it from my brain with extremely good reason. Must be one of the worst films ever, surely. Well, wanted to see if I could get you two with it as well. Okay.
If he gets us, can we agree?
He's got
if
me.
Gets us,
he's got me.
If he gets me, can we? This has got to be next week.
Sure. Well, it's your list, but if you want to incorporate Luke Richardson's,
no. I'd say like no list. This if he gets me now. I know, like it's a whole bit of the podcast, but come on, is it fun?
I think even if it does get you, you might not want to do it.
Okay.
Reserve, but like, sure, we'll reserve that.
If I don't want to do it, I'll just say don't.
And there might
be,
then don't commit yourself because there's three more emails, yeah?
So okay.
Luke Richardson's definitely onto something here, and I love the description of it completely got me. That's exactly the purpose of the Movies You Forgot You Forgot podcast.
This is what we want.
This is what we want. I want that feeling of going, oh shit, of course, I completely forgot about that.
I just want to know the movies that got other people out.
Well, let me tell you the one that got Luke Richardson out. It's the movie Shallow Hal with Gwyneth Paltrow and Jack Black. He says, I rewatched the trailer and it didn't disappoint in how disappointed I was that this film was ever allowed to be made.
I never watched it because I loved Dumb and Dumber so much. I quite liked Kingpin. And when that came out, it got so shit on. I stayed away.
It's not great. Yeah, it's. I think everyone's probably happy that that one's gone on the forgotten list.
But I love how it really got him plumb.
It got Luke Richardson plumb. It did. Luke also sends a follow-up paragraph chastising me for saying that Moby and the Bourne franchise's connection is more famous than Eye of the Tiger and Rocky. And he's also upset with you for not pulling my pants down about that one. But there we go. Thanks, Luke Richardson. Next email is from Kieran Lynch. Kieran Lynch said, a great podcast. The sly digs are ones only good friends could get away with. Well,
whatever, that's true. Whatever does he mean?
Whatever does he mean? He's got a couple of films for us here.
I don't think I've got away with any of my sly digs. I think I actually hurt your feelings today.
Just one little bit. You hurt my feelings a little bit earlier, but it's fine because we addressed it head on, almost. It was almost head on, and I feel much better now. Anyway, I can read this list to you because these are films that I haven't seen before, with the exception of one, and that one I'm not willing to do, okay? But these are the list from Kieran Lynch. Kieran suggests The Time Traveller's Wife, which is the one I've seen, but I did not enjoy.
Didn't see it.
Enemy at the Gate.
Oh, that, I've tried to get that past you. That's a great offering.
Yeah.
You should watch it because you'll forget it and we can do it in the future.
I will watch it. And the same for these final two. There's only one, Jimmy Grimble and Aeon Flux.
Never watched Grimble because why would anyone watch Grimble?
Sure.
And Aeon Flux. Again, it looks so shit. That's a forgotten Charlie's flick.
Right.
Again, I think maybe they're too, I worry that Shallow Hal, Flux, Grimble, these are films that no one's watching in the first place to forget. They're just they're forgotten by, is forgotten the right word?
Yeah.
Just, but no one saw them.
Sure. So how could they be remembered? That's what you mean.
Right.
Can a cat that's in a box that was born in the box and no one put in there, can it be forgotten or seen or known? That's sort of Schrodinger-y.
They've forgotten, but they haven't been forgot. They've forgotten.
No,
but I love how they're trying.
Yeah,
keep,
that's true.
Keep trying, guys.
Keep trying.
Enemy at the Gates.
Well, here's a try from William August. The subject line of the email: I pray that both Adam and Joe have forgotten they forgot this movie. The film is Junior, starring the Terminator.
I never watched it, but I think that has already been done on another podcast that's been done on How Did This Get Made,
right?
And they just make fun of it, of films, and I don't, that can't be our wheelhouse. Our wheelhouse has to be quite, you know,
confusing and vague,
right?
Yeah,
forgettable films.
Oh, I have seen Junior. That's where he's pregnant,
right? Would you ever forget such a shit? I mean, you did, you forgot. Did you forget you forgot it?
I mean, yeah, I forgot that Emma Thompson's in it.
Unfortunately for those kinds of suggestions, I'm so much of a snob,
sure,
that I would never have bothered to watch it. Like, I never watched... I mean, I watched Twins, obviously, because I was the right age, but...
Yeah.
I'm not going to watch Junior.
Well, no, that's fine. Thanks anyway for the email.
Oh, thank you. Of course, thank you for the email. Absolutely.
Anyway, here's another... The final email now. This one's in from Will Talman, who I think either was the person who sent us that nice email about being a new father, or was just mentioned on the same episode and isn't that person at all, but one or the other. Will says, I apologise if a couple of these films have already been discussed and or dismissed. Here are some very American suggestions, says Will. I haven't actually seen any of these, so again, I could read these. Southern Comfort, which Will suggested, incidentally, due to us discussing The Warriors.
Yeah, that's. I saw that when I was back in uni. It's. I had forgot I'd seen it.
Oh, it would have
I
got
could
you.
Put that more of a culty film. It's kind of, it's got Deliverance vibes. It's, I think it's army guys out in the bayou.
Right. Blue Bayou, baby.
I remember it being a decent little flick. I can't remember. There was nothing compelling me about to rewatch it.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's possibly too, it's too old. It's too, it's like, it's 80s. It's early 80s.
Well, we can't do them anyway because I've never seen them. But here's the other three.
Well, that's what I meant, because you've not seen any films.
It's outside of my window. I mean, I've seen some, but I haven't got blanket coverage.
No.
And the other three from Will Talman are Almost Heroes, Slapshot, and Bull Durham. Not Bill Durham.
I'm not familiar with Almost Heroes. Bull Durham, definitely forgot I'd seen that, but that's old. Kevin Costner, very
is
solid.
Is the dad that you guys didn't talk about, says Will.
Oh, he is the dad we never talked about.
That's quite nice. And Tim Robbins is the son in this film.
Right,
yeah.
We don't.
Yeah. Not the son that we haven't talked about.
No, because we don't have kids.
It's useful to have the American perspective, isn't it, from Will Talman?
Yeah, I think maybe Slapshot and Bull Durham, I would feel I know you haven't seen them, but I wouldn't suggest them because I would feel like I would be talking about films that are too
sure
in the canon, in the 70s, 80s
right.
film canon, and yeah. people would think I was film thick.
You're worried about what people think again, aren't you?
Well, of course I am.
Yeah.
As we move further and further away from the 70s and the 80s, ipso facto, those films are going to be forgotten.
Sure.
And they're not really the films that you get on your streaming services.
No, of course.
So, you know, they maybe we'll get to them.
Point taken.
But you'd have to watch them in the first place.
I would. Well, thanks, Will Talman, who also includes in the subject line of his email, Barry Lyndon or Amadeus and some alternative ideas. To which I say, Barry Lyndon I haven't watched yet, and Amadeus I could never forget, because, woof, what a terrific film.
Barry Lyndon is fantastic. It kind of peters off in the last hour, but it's still great. And yeah, Amadeus, director's cut, of course. I need to rewatch that. It's time.
I mean, I'd be happy to do a special episode on Amadeus, because I really love it.
I saw that. They showed that to us in school.
Did they? In school, secondary school.
I think 13.
Wow.
And the opening scene is Salieri slicing his throat.
Sure.
Oh, it's pretty rum stuff for a little 13-year-old Jimmy Richmond.
Pretty rum indeed.
Shall we do the game where I read out a long list of films and we find out what film we're going to do?
I think we should do
The Forgot You Forgot game.
You're saying it's not Shallow Hal.
I love the moxie and the chutzpah, but it ain't Shallow Hal.
Okay, read me some film names.
Submarine?
I don't recall that film.
That's the directorial debut of Richard Ayoade.
Oh, shit!
Mate, I've got you. Plum.
For fuck's sake.
I really don't want to have to rewatch that.
Well, the thing is, I've got the double on my list, which makes this all the more impressive that you've managed to get me, because that's Richard Ayoade's other film.
Do we want to do Submarine?
I mean, I think I'd prefer to do Submarine than the double. A, because people actually watched Submarine. No one watched the double. Is it just going to be the Richard Ayoade episode?
Everyone talked about Submarine when it came out.
Sure.
And they really hyped the double. He's not made a film since.
No.
He was mooted as kind of the British Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
Maybe it would be a really short episode. I find that, isn't that fascinating? What happened?
Yeah.
Are those films actually any good?
I mean, it's going to be an easy box office game, presumably.
What? No, it's not.
Well, I mean, neither of them will have made very much money.
That's what makes it harder.
Okay, sure. But then I've framed my point back incorrectly. Yeah, it will be a hard game for you to play on account of how low the numbers are.
There you go.
Yeah.
But even if there's nothing to say about what happened to Richard Ayoade, it's a coming of age film.
Sure.
Paddy Considine's in it.
Yeah.
We don't have to, but.
No. Let's do it.
So that was the Passengers episode. You've been listening to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me. And say goodbye, Joe.
Goodbye.